loves, and welcome to or welcome back to the Self Love Club pod. I'm so excited to have you here. A couple of things before we start this week's episode. I don't know if you've noticed, hopefully you did, because if you didn't, I'm going to be a little bit embarrassed. I did get a mic, so hopefully the sound quality of this week's episode and future episodes to come will be a little bit more professional and a little less juvenile, because last episode, the sound quality wasn't great. It wasn't awful, but it could have definitely been a lot better, so I'm sorry about that. And another thing, unfortunately, there will be no new episodes the next 2 weeks. Very sad, because I am actually leaving for Houston July 24th, and I am coming back August 1st. I'm going to a medical program, and so that means that on July 25th, as well as August 1st, there won't be new episodes out, because I definitely cannot be filming a podcast and also editing said podcast while I am also, you know, partaking in a medical program. That's kind of an all hands on deck type thing, so I apologize for that in advance. So let's just get on with this week's episode. It is going to be all about my lovely little friend, although actually I wouldn't call it that at all. Anxiety. Yay! Anxiety is something that I've struggled with my entire life, basically. It was genetic in my family, specifically on my mom's side. A lot of the women in my family have experienced some form of anxiety in their lives, so me getting that was kind of just expected. And growing up, specifically when I was young, I kind of knew that I was experiencing something, but I didn't really know if it even had a name. I didn't know how to define it. And I think a part of me also just thought that, you know, the average 5-year-old was feeling the exact same way that I was feeling. And in reality, the average kindergartner was probably, concerned with what they were gonna draw or color for the next art project. And me, I was most concerned with like these wildly unrealistic scenarios and like completely believed that these crazy things were gonna happen to me or happen to my family. And now looking back, obviously they weren't. And half of the things that I thought were gonna happen are literally impossible to ever occur. And I think one of the first examples that I can think of like anxiety being in my life was, it's actually a really funny and ridiculous story now that I look back, but at the time I was completely terrified. I used to watch Sesame Street a lot when I was a kid, and for some reason I was terrified of Cookie Monster. I don't know why. And I had this for months, this recurring anxious nightmare that I was watching Cookie Monster and my grandpa was like holding me up to the TV screen, and Cookie Monster was on the screen I was watching, and he basically like reached his hand through my television screen, picked me up, and like was trying to eat me, basically, as if I were a cookie. And it is so stupid now that I'm looking back, and I obviously now realize how impossible that is, but at the time I guess I didn't really know that, so that thought like terrified me. And I don't know if it was like just my weird childhood imagination thinking that up, or if it was anxiety. I feel like it was kind of a combination of both. But obviously, as I grew up, the scenarios that I would, you know, think about when I had anxious thoughts were a lot more severe and definitely had nothing to do with a Sesame Street character eating me. But yeah, after that point in my life, I kind of just lived with it. I didn't really do anything about it for a long time, until about a year ago when I started seeing my therapist. And I'm very transparent about like me going to therapy. It's definitely not something that I am ashamed of, and it's something that I actually am really proud of, that I took that step to talk to somebody about what I was feeling. And I first started going to her, it was both a combination of, you know, me experiencing what I was experiencing relating to anxiety, and also I just needed somebody to talk to. And she basically told me after a couple sessions, like, yeah, you know, you do have anxiety. This is what you experience. And I was feeling this kind of whirlwind of emotions after hearing that. For one, I was kind of relieved. I wasn't excited for sure, but I was relieved that like what I was experiencing had a name, and I knew that because it had a name, that means that it's like something that other people struggle with as well, and that I wasn't the only one. So that was kind of a feeling of reassurance. But I think at the same time, I even started to doubt my therapist, which is so weird. Like, she's literally a licensed professional, but at the time, I was like, that can't be true. And the reason why was because something with my anxiety is that I have never had panic attacks, and I've never experienced any sort of anxiety attack or anything. And so when I would talk to people about like what I was feeling and experiencing, and I would, you know, describe my symptoms and all of that, their first thought would be like, that sounds like anxiety. And me being ignorant and me not knowing and me, you know, unknowingly contributing to the stigma would say, oh, but like, you know, it's not anxiety. I've never experienced a panic attack or anxiety attack. And then whoever I was talking to, regardless of who it was, it kind of all flipped the switch and just said, no, yeah, definitely not anxiety, then it must be something else. And I do realize that for anxiety to be debilitating and for you to need medication for anxiety, you need to experience some sort of panic attack. But just because I didn't experience any panic attacks doesn't mean that it, you know, my anxiety as a whole did not exist. And when I think about breaking the stigma and the stigma in itself surrounding mental health and mental disorders, I think of that scenario that happened with me, because not only was hearing that kind of invalidating at the time, and it made me doubt myself and doubt what I was feeling and made me think that maybe I was just making everything up, but it's just like a cycle of ignorance, you know? And those people that I was talking to, not knowing any better, I'm sure they didn't want to make me feel invalidated, but that was just the way that they viewed the disorder. I think a lot of people have a certain picture in their brain about what anxiety is and what somebody who has anxiety looks like. And for a lot of people, I think that that picture includes somebody experiencing a panic attack. And so because they had that preconceived image in their head, they applied it to my own situation, and as a result, I ended up feeling invalidated and feeling like, you know, maybe I am just making this all up. Maybe this isn't as bad as my brain is making it seem. And obviously that wasn't the case, because, you know, years later, I did have a licensed professional tell me, no, you know, this is what you're feeling and this is what you're experiencing. And another thing was, I think my mindset for so long has just been to internalize every single thing that I was feeling, because I think I thought, you know, since I have no visible symptoms of anxiety, since I am not experiencing panic attacks and people can't really see what's going on with me, that means that it's nobody's problem. You know, if people can't see it, it's not their problem. I shouldn't tell anybody about it. I should just keep it to myself because I don't want to be a burden. And that way of thinking is so incredibly harmful, and it still impacts me to this day. You know, now I know about the stigma, and I know that, like, the way that certain people view this disorder isn't always accurate. But I remember, like, when I was young, I felt like the world was against me, and, you know, it wasn't just my brain anymore. My brain was against me, but so were the people around me, because they couldn't see what was going on with me, and obviously they couldn't experience it themselves. So as a result, they kind of began to resent me a little bit and think that I was making stuff up when I wasn't. And it really hurt me at the time, because I knew that I wasn't making this stuff up. But obviously, how are people going to know if they can't really see it, you know? And it's just so important for me to highlight that nobody experiences a disorder the same way. You know, there might be common symptoms and common things that people might experience if they have a disorder, but as human beings, we are so impacted, specifically about events and situations that happen in our developmental years, like early childhood. We are so impacted by those events and situations. Even when we're old and wrinkly, you know, you can still see little traces of those traumatic or, you know, impactful situations that we've had when we were little, like very, very little. You can still see them even when you're really old, and they kind of just never go away unless you learn how to kind of push them away and push them out of your own head. And for me, my spiritual journey has really helped with my anxiety, and affirmations have been super helpful. And I'm not saying that they're any form of like therapy or medication, or they're just some magical remedy that'll make this disorder go away. Absolutely not. If they did that, I'm sure everybody in the world would be writing affirmations, and most therapists would probably not have their job. But it definitely helped me a lot, and it made me feel kind of a sense of clarity. I would write things like, I am not anxious, and I have control over my own life. And writing those words and repeating them back to myself, repeating them back to my brain, definitely helped with anxiety. You know, it's still something that I experienced. And I remember somebody asked me one time, like, how did you make your anxiety go away? Because I often talk about, you know, how my anxiety has gotten better and how affirmations have kind of helped that. And I told that person, you know, it hasn't gone away. There's nothing that, like, you know, affirmations themselves can do to make it go away. They can definitely help, but at the end of the day, it's something that I need to do. It's something that I need to rewire my brain in order to think differently about these situations and about, you know, things socially. I need to change the way that my brain responds to certain situations, and that's just it. And my therapist was telling me about one of Freud's theories, I believe. It's the fight, flight, or fright. No. Hello? Fight, flight, or freeze. I always get that wrong. And basically, they all revolve around how a person responds to maybe like an argument or some sort of like discourse, like dramatic situation. And if you are a fight, it basically means that you insert yourself in whatever the conflict is and kind of feel the responsibility to fix whatever is going on around you, even if it has absolutely nothing to do with you. And if you're a flight, it means that when you see these kind of conflict situations, or when you're involved in these conflict situations, you kind of flee or maybe run away from them out of fear. And if you're a freeze, that means that you recognize that the situation is going on. You don't go and attack it head on, but you also don't run away from it. And you're kind of just there, and you're, you know, cordially trying to work out whatever the conflict situation is. So ideally, in conflict situations, you'd want to be a freeze, because it's not like you're running away. It's not like you're inserting yourself where it's not needed. You're kind of just there and you're working it out. But for me, my therapist told me at least that I am a fight. So even if the situation has absolutely nothing to do with me, my anxiety basically tells me that you need to go insert yourself in that situation, because you hold responsibility for the way that everybody else in the room is feeling and acting, which, you know, obviously is not true. And my entire life, really, I've been characterized as kind of like the caretaker and the very empathetic and compassionate and kind person, and the, you know, the person that's always willing to put others' needs before her own. And don't get me wrong, I love being called kind and compassionate, and I love helping people. I literally work at a hospital. But the final remark that, you know, is made is like putting other people's needs before your own. And that is not a great thing. You know, I know it's something that a lot of people struggle with, but it really isn't a flex. You know, it's important as human beings that we take care of others, but there's a fine line between taking care of others and like putting others before yourself. And what I've noticed, and what I think is kind of like you would expect, but it's also ironic to me, is that the only people that have really commented on me, you know, taking care of others' needs before my own and like being such a caretaker were the people that were receiving that care and attention from me. You know, if I wasn't acting in that way with a person, they wouldn't notice it. So, you know, the only people that noticed how empathetic and how kind I was and how, you know, I put people's needs before my own, those were the people who I was giving that care and attention to and putting before myself. And obviously, whether it's intentional or not, most people like that. You know, they like the feeling of having somebody in their life that is gonna undoubtedly like care for them, even if it means not caring for themselves first. And unfortunately, a lot of people kind of use people like that because they know that regardless of what, you know, they experience, regardless if it has to do with the disorder or whatever, that they're always going to be like that unless they learn to change it. But unless somebody tells them, you know, straight on that, you know, the way that you're acting, you should put yourself first instead of other people, unless somebody tells them, they're not even going to realize. They're going to think that that's normal, you know, because they're kind of blinded by it. And they just think that everybody is their responsibility when they aren't, you know? And another thing is specifically with empaths. I'm an empath myself, and in case you don't know what that is, it basically means that I kind of describe it as somebody being an energy magnet, you know, whether it's good energy or bad energy. For example, like if somebody is in a really negative and toxic work environment and everybody around them is super negative, not in a good mood, even if one person, like the empath, even if the empath is in a super good mood, they're going to kind of start to absorb the energy of people around them, or they're going to try and fix everybody around them. And either way, it doesn't really end up well for the empath, and it kind of just leads them to always be mentally drained and mentally exhausted, because putting other people's emotions, like, and kind of grabbing onto them and acting like they're your own can make you feel like so weird and like out of your own body. You know, it can make you feel like, oh my god, like I'm experiencing so many feelings right now, and it can lead to a lot of, you know, internal discourse within yourself, like why are you even feeling these feelings? And you're feeling those feelings and you're confused about why you're feeling them, because they're not even your own, they're somebody else's. And I talk a lot about energy vampires, and for me, those are the people that in your life that are always kind of negative. And regardless of the reason why, as an empath, I always notice that after being around those people, I am always super drained mentally or just in a really bad mood. And I overall, I'm a very happy and optimistic person. And obviously now I'm no longer associated with those people that made me feel in that way, but at the time when I was still around those people a lot, it just wasn't good for me. I was so mentally drained and exhausted, and I just couldn't really take it anymore after some point. And so I kind of had to release myself from that person in that situation. And that is completely okay. I don't know who told people that if you just randomly drop somebody, you're a horrible, terrible person. I mean, obviously, for the wrong reasons, yeah. But if you have to separate yourself from somebody because they're impacting your mental health, that is completely okay to do. And you should never, ever apologize for doing that, baby. You are fucking important. Your mental health is important. Like, never apologize for, you know, distancing yourself from somebody or a certain situation if it's impacting you that much. Your mental health is important too, not just the people around you. And I know that it's hard to think about that sometimes. Trust me, I get it. But it's just something that we need to learn over time and gradually get ourselves adapted to. And yes, I guess our closing note is that with any sort of disorder that you're feeling, it is so important to separate yourself from it. One example that I can think of me not doing this, I was in therapy, and my therapist wanted me to basically write a list titled, "Who Am I?" And in the list, I would write, "I am blank, I am blank." And she wanted me to think of a couple of things, like three things on the spot. And I think I said something like, you know, I am kind, I am smart. And the final thing I said was, I am anxious. And she stopped me after I said that. And she said, listen, like, you are not anxious, you have anxiety. You know, if you start associating yourself with that disorder and, you know, if you use vocabulary that basically makes it seem like you and your anxiety are the same person or are one and the same, you're going to start to feel it to a more severe degree. And once she said that, I kind of realized how often I had said things like, or even the people around me had said things like, I am depressed, I am anxious. And that always makes you feel worse than how you actually feel. Because it's important to recognize that you are not your anxiety, baby. You are not your depression. You are not your ADHD. You are not your OCD. That is not you. That is something that you struggle with and something that you have had to learn to adapt to your life. But that is not you. You are so much more than that. And when we start saying things like, I am anxious, I am depressed, it makes us feel that way. And it makes us feel like, even if it's unintentional, that we will never get away from whatever we're feeling. You know, so once you learn and kind of adapt your vocabulary to separate yourself from whatever you're feeling, you're going to feel so much better. You're not going to feel tied to it anymore. You're not going to feel like you are responsible for that, because you're not. You're not, baby, okay? I think that's about it for this week's episode. I love you all so incredibly much, and I hope that you have taken something from this week's episode and maybe have learned that you are not your mental health. You are not what you struggle with. You are so much more than that. And if somebody can't see that, or if somebody uses the way that you associate yourself with your disorder to their advantage, they're not good for you. And never, ever, ever apologize for removing yourself from a toxic situation or a toxic person. It doesn't matter how that person reacts. Whatever is best for you is best for you, okay? I love you all so much. I hope that you'll tune in for, I guess, the new episode in like 3 weeks. Don't forget about me, y'all. And yes, I love you so much. And I'm so proud of you and how much that you've had to deal with and how, you know, you have just overcome it all. And like I said last episode, I'm never gonna stop saying this. You are a light, baby, okay? I love you, angel. Bye.